A tortoise has celebrated his 175th birthday in Australia. Harriet, a giant Galapagos tortoise, celebrated her birthday at a zoo in Queensland's Sunshine Coast with a pink hibiscus flower cake. She's roughly the size of a dinner table. Some people believe Harriet, now this is the greatest line I've heard in a long time, some people believe Harriet was studied by British naturalist Charles Darwin. Isn't that something? Darwin apparently took several young giant tortoises back to London after his epic voyage. Although the animal's exact date of birth is not known, DNA testing has indicated its approximate age. DNA testing has suggested that Harriet was born around 1830, a few years before Darwin visited the Galapagos Islands in 1835. That would really be something. Too bad she can't talk. Well, in a moment, we're going to talk about Mothman and Thunderbirds with cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman. And then next hour, we're going to bring in a researcher on the Thunderbirds and then an eyewitness. So get ready for all of this on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome to Coast, Lauren Coleman has been a researcher and writer investigating mysteries for 45 years. He's the leading researcher on the Bigfoot phenomenon and has written a new comprehensive study of its history called Bigfoot, The True Story of Apes in America. Coleman has put over 40 years of research into his book, which takes readers from the very first sightings of the creature up to the latest internet rumors and scientific studies. In the process, he introduces us to the fascinating world of cryptozoology, the study of hidden animals that is rapidly gaining popularity. He is our guest on Coast to Coast. Lauren, how are you?
Okay, George, how are you doing?
Good. Good to have you back. You've been busy. You never stop.
Oh, it's been quite a month and a half. Lots been going on in the United States and around the world.
I also understand interesting situation where you might be looking for some real photographs of either Bigfoot, the abominable snowman, or Nessie?
Right. What's happened is Dual Masters, the Wizards of the Coast Company, has done a promotion in which they're really looking to try to interest what they're calling cryptozoologists in training to send in pictures of the evidence of Bigfoot, Yeti, or Nessie, and then they're going to go through all these photographs. They really started around the Creature Appreciation Week, which was the last week of October, and the contest goes through the first week in February. And they're going to pick out the best photographs that show this evidence, and there's a first prize of $5,000, then a second prize of $2,500, and then there's $3,500 third prizes. So it's a very serious contest in which they're looking. Obviously, the Dual Masters trading game cards has different creatures on these cards, and they're showing that there is a reality base to some of these games that young people are playing.
So with this about 2 weeks old now, has anybody submitted anything that might be worth looking at?
Well, the photographs are going to the company, and then what's going to happen is in New York, myself, and I'm going to head the panel to start looking at these. So I won't really see them until February. And, of course, I can't send in any photographs myself, shucks.
But you'd be a slam dunk winner if you did that.
Right. But I'm very interested in people taking this seriously and getting those photographs in so that we can see if and there's no age limit. Even though the trading cards are very much oriented towards young people, the only limits is with regard to United States citizens and any age group.
A couple of months ago, of course, as you know, Lauren, the hoopla, the excitement of the possibility of finding Bigfoot was crushed once again when it just didn't happen. Do you ever think in our lifetime we may find one of these creatures?
Yeah, I think that, if you're talking about, for instance, the Yukon, Alaska hair samples that were found, and then there was the David Clark video. The Clark video, for instance, may show something, but we don't have, it's not a good camera that he used, so the analysis kind of little foggy, and the hair sample turned out to be a bison.
Right.
I think what often happens is that we, and the public doesn't hear about all of them, we see lots of these bits of evidence that don't turn out to be anything, or they're still inconclusive. I've always said that within 25 years, I think we'll probably get firm evidence of Bigfoot, Sasquatch, and that maybe some of these other things around the world, like, you know, Yeti, or even the finding of the hobbits, for instance, in Indonesia, is really pretty exciting.
That is a great story.
It is, because here we as cryptozoologists, really since the last century and then before in the 1800s, we were gathering stories of the reports of little hairy people. And here we actually finally have bones. I mean, people always say, where are the bones? Where are the bones? Well, they've been found, and these creatures, these little hobbits, were half the size of pygmies, hairy, and they were alive 10,000 years ago.
Yeah, and fully developed little people, right?
Right. Nine individuals have been found. All of this business that there was disease reminded me, and I actually talked about this at a symposium recently, that when the Neanderthal man was first found, everybody said it was one, either a Cossack, or somebody with rickets. So you always hear this at the beginning, and the debunkers come along, and they really don't want to open their mind to the fact that we can say there's new things out there, and we're finding them all the time.
Hey, Lauren, November 15th is an interesting year. It's an anniversary year, but tell us for what?
Well, on November 15th in 1966 was the date upon which many people really point back to the birth of Mothman. On that date, Linda Scarberry and her husband, and then the Mallet, two couples in their 20s, were driving around Point Pleasant, right outside of Point Pleasant in the TNT area, and they saw this six-foot creature coming towards them. Linda got very scared, said it looked like an angel, and that's the first sort of label that she'd put on it. But the thing all of a sudden spread its wings, and the wings were like 12 to 20 feet across, and it chased them back into town. And this was the first report of many, over 100 reports of what was finally called by a newspaper man, Mothman. The local residents had actually called it the Birdman or Big Bird. So the whole Mothman thing came out of the reporter's interest in the Batman series that was current on TV.
How accurate do you think John Keel's Mothman Prophecies, that movie, was to cryptozoology and its search for Mothman?
Well, I think we need to, you know, back up. The movie very much was a reflection of the director, and the director, Mark Pellington, he very much felt that this was more a psychological thriller that he wanted to put together. And if you look back at John Keel's book, of course, he was interested in, and he doesn't believe, for instance, that UFOs come from outer space. They're really inner space.
Mm-hmm.
And demonology and occultism. Keel, he's a good friend, and I really respect his writings and how they excite the public. But indeed, he feels that this is really a demonological story, that it has nothing to do with cryptozoology or ufology. And what he did was really mix in Men in Black, UFOs, psychic phenomena, cattle mutilations in the book. And what I do in my work, in my book on the same subject, is really try to look at the zoological basis here. And for most eyewitnesses down in Point Pleasant in the 1960s, they were seeing a large bird that was, you know,
a six-foot-tall bird,
very similar to the old reports that we have from 100 years ago in the same area of birds over horse and buggies and birds chasing cars, maybe something like a giant owl or a thunderbird. So that whole situation can get very regionalized. And you see the same thing with people calling monsters in New Jersey the Jersey Devil.
That's true. I want to point out that next hour, Mark Hall will join Lauren and myself as we talk about Thunderbirds. And then at the latter half of the hour, Lauren, we'll bring in the eyewitness, Judy, with an incredible story as well. And then we'll keep you and Mark around for phone calls in the following hour.
Sure.
all of these mysteries, of course, of creatures on this planet have really astounded all of us since we were kids, and they just don't seem to go away. Now, some people on one hand would say, look, they haven't been solved. They haven't been solved in hundreds of years. Why are they still mysteries? Maybe they're just figments of our imagination. How do you argue that?
Well, I think that what happens in cryptozoology is we're investigating 200 different cryptids, you know, these different creatures around the world. And as soon as an animal is discovered, it's no longer part of cryptozoology, and people forget that. For instance, the coelacanth, the 65-million-year-old living fossil, this fish that was found off of South Africa, and now we found them more recently off of Indonesia, that's something that now is part of zoology. The ivory-billed woodpecker, for instance, a lot of people said that was extinct, and yet anybody that saw ivory-billed woodpecker before last year was said to be a crazy hillbilly that was seeing something like Bigfoot. And so it's dismissed very easily, but then as soon as they're found, like, for instance, they recently took photographs of the live giant squid, the first time that the giant squid has ever been.
What great video that was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And before that, of course, this was the kraken, the mythical beast that would haul down ships.
And, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and stuff like that. And we know the kraken actually exists. It's the giant squid. You see this over and over again with the okapi, that sort of forest animal in Africa that looks sort of like a prehistoric giraffe with stripes, and that's what it is. And, you know, things like the mountain gorilla, all of these animals which have been disputed and had fantastic stories 100 years ago now are forgotten, that they were as mysterious as Bigfoot was.
What about that prehistoric creature they found a skeleton of last week? He had a head of a Tyrannosaurus and a body of a serpent with fins about 13 feet long. I mean, varied, four-inch teeth. I mean, so
right.
You're talking about a creature that if you were swimming, Lorne, you wouldn't be in the water too much longer.
Right, the one that the media was calling Godzilla.
Yes, that one.
Right. Right, those are exciting. Those are showing us that there's still new fossils out there, and based upon those fossils, maybe some of these, you know, the lake monsters that they're seeing in China right now, for instance, could be very real.
Bigfoot, the abominable snowman, Loch Ness Monster aside, those three major cryptozoology creatures, if you had to guess how many creatures of considerable size, let's say, not little organisms, but how many creatures there might be on this planet that we have no idea and we've never found, I mean, can you guess what could be out there?
Oh, no, I can't guess, but I would wager a bet that if we're talking about animals that are big enough to be seen by humans, in other words, something bigger than a cat, there's probably anywhere between 200 to 1,000 that will be discovered in the next 100 years. And, you know, there's new bird species. There's one new species of monkey that's been discovered in the last 15 years every year in Brazil and the Amazon. They found a new monkey in Africa, first new monkey they'd found over there in 20 years. It just keeps happening. It happens every other week that we're finding new animals. And most people, like you said, only hear about the big three, Bigfoot, Yeti, and the Loch Ness Monster, but there's new animals being discovered all the time.
Had an incredible call to the show yesterday, Lorne, of an individual who saw a bear. He said it scared him so much he hid in a wastebasket, a trash can, yeah. That this thing, he said, must have been bigger. He said bigger than 12 feet standing up, because our guest said, well, maybe it's about 12 feet. He said, no, it was huge. I'm going to guess then 14 to 16 feet. Have you ever heard of a bear that big standing up on its hind legs?
Well, the Kodiak bears are certainly big, but Bernard Heuvelmans, the father of cryptozoology, did a whole study of people and their perceptions of animals in the woods. And if they're hairy creatures, he said that people tend to exaggerate the size of these animals by one-third. So we have to always consider that. I mean, I don't go around saying that the witnesses are wrong, but I certainly, and in fact, I'm one of those people that confirms a lot of these things, but we have to understand that when you're scared, you're going to naturally exaggerate a bit.
Well, it's like the fish that got away story.
Yeah, sort of like that.
You know, you may be right. They see something, they're scared, they're panicked. It's much bigger than they thought it was.
Right, and a bear standing up is natural tendency of bears are to try to make themselves bigger and look bigger so that the thing that they're afraid of will be more scared of them. So.
The stories of Mothman, have they died down or are they still out there?
I think what happens is all of these stories go in cycles, and so right now we're beginning to hear stories of mystery cats or Bigfoot. The Mothman, of course, when the 2002 movie came out, we heard a lot about Thunderbird reports and Mothman reports, and I, you know, went down to West Virginia and reconfirmed that people had not, that the Mothmen were not disappearing, that people had not disappeared as witnesses, and that they'd just been quiet about it. And so we're in one of those quiet periods for Mothman. There was a report from Serbia about 6 months ago of a quote-unquote flying man being seen. So you're hearing kind of some reports, international reports of some of these things going on. But the big bird that was seen in Pennsylvania and the large Thunderbird-type creature that was seen in Alaska, which people really related to the Mothman, happened soon after the movie when people felt that the ridicule curtain down and they could actually talk about these things without being laughed at.
Well, how do they describe the face of this creature?
Well, Mothman's pretty intriguing because depending upon what people tend to, when they tell the story. In other words, if you talk to people that saw this creature in 1966, 67, down through the years, it's got more and more human, and that has a lot to do with John Keel's book.
I see.
But the original reports with this was a creature that had its head more or less sunken into the body. And if you hold, if you step back from an owl, for instance, and you look at the way an owl holds its head,
it's like it has no neck.
There's no neck there, and there's just two huge shoulders, which are the wings. And that, in many ways, is what these giant Mothman reports look like, a giant owl far away.
Now, are the reports, though, that Mothman attacks people? Does it come after them, or is it afraid of them?
No, what seems to be happening, and for instance, in this 1967 report on November 15th, the 1957 Chevy is racing away 60 miles, 100 miles an hour. And, of course, those were the 60s, so the two women on the date, the two wives, actually, were in the back seat. And they were looking out the window, and this creature was flying so that the wings seemed to touch each side of the car as it was flapping. And so they were screaming hysterically. And what happened, though, is then the car turned off into the more urbanized area of Point Pleasant, and the creature disappeared. What we're finding over and over again is these creatures seem to be using the air turbulence of the cars to actually help them move along. And it's not so much that they may be attacking the cars, that they're merely following the cars like lots of small cars on the highways used to use the big trucks to help them pull them along.
Well, that's interesting, and somehow they've been able to pick up on that.
Right, but as far as any real face-to-face attacks on the ground or these Mothmen going along and killing kids or things like that, which you hear in the much more traditional Thunderbird stories that Mark and I will talk about in the next hour, where dogs are picked up, you don't hear that really about the Mothman reports.
Well, but we have heard stories about people or animals being picked up in the past with birds. Yeah.
Oh, yes, definitely. Definitely. And the whole other mystique about Mothman, of course, is that at the end of the 13 months, and on December 15th, 1967, the Silver Bridge collapsed.
Now, let's talk about that when we come back. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And with our special guest, Lauren Coleman, and then next hour, we're going to be joined by Mark Hall, and then eventually a witness about Thunderbirds, America's living legends of giant birds. I'm talking about huge wingspans. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. On December 15, 1967, at approximately 5 o'clock in the afternoon, the U.S. Highway 35 bridge connecting Point Pleasant, West Virginia, and Ohio suddenly collapsed into the Ohio River. It's called the Silver Bridge Collapse, the Silver Bridge, because it was the country's first aluminum-painted bridge. At the time of the failure, 37 vehicles were crossing the bridge span. 31 of those automobiles fell with the bridge. 46 individuals died with the buckling of the bridge, and 9 were seriously injured. Along with numerous fatalities and injuries, a major transportation route connecting West Virginia and Ohio was destroyed, disrupting the lives of many and striking fear across the nation. You bring this up, Lauren Coleman. How come?
Well, for people interested in Mothman, the collapse of the Silver Bridge was seen as the event that the Mothman was the banshee to. In other words, many people have seen, and you can tell it from the title of the Mothman Prophecies, that the Mothman was there to prophesy something that was going to happen, some kind of tragedy. A lot of people around the area had this doom and gloom sort of feeling, and one of the reporters, Mary Hyde at the time, started having dreams of seeing Christmas packages in the river, in the Ohio River. And that's what actually did happen.
Oh, my.
When the Silver Bridge, there was 2 red lights at each end of the bridge that froze and created more than the usual weight on that bridge. People had been in heavy traffic doing some Christmas shopping. When the bridge collapsed, you had something that you know people had really seen in their mind. Other people reported they'd seen Mothman around the bridge right before it. Other people had felt that the Mothman was so spooky and so, you know, banshee-like that it was really heading up to something like this. John Keel himself, through different kind of contactees, felt that something big and dangerous was going to happen. And he was actually in his New York apartment watching the lighting of the Christmas tree at the White House. And the lighting of the Christmas tree occurred. The lights went on, and then the bridge collapsed down in Point Pleasant, West Virginia.
And some were also talking about corrosion might have also been a factor with this collapse.
Well, the collapse was actually, they did do analysis, and they found that I bar number 13, it was a little switch in the beams, had fallen out or cracked, and that it was really back to number 13 again. And so the whole idea that you keep having
13, ominous number two, Lauren,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, yep. So what is what I think people fail to really feel about hearing the news of the Silver Bridge collapsing, at the time in the United States, no bridges had been inspected like they are now until that bridge collapsed. This was news on the scale of anything that you see on you know, on radio or here on radio for days and days. You know, it was a major news item. People started looking at bridges all across the country and found that it actually mandatory federal inspections of bridges needed to take place.
I got to tell you, I think we've been lucky. I think most bridges are in worse shape than the Silver Bridge was.
Oh yeah, I think that we're, you know, people are beginning to wonder if there are going to be more Mothman sightings and then more bridges collapsing. I mean, it's actually on that scale, and I hear people talking about that because we aren't fixing bridges very well.
Well, you know, if you talk to any truck driver, and we get many of them who call the program, they have been on just about every bridge in this country.
Right.
They could probably tell us all kinds of stories.
And then the collapse of the bridge really started me thinking after the movie came out, and you hear all this business about curses like the Poltergeist movie curse and 4 people died after the movie came out or The Exorcist. And I started hearing some very strange things about deaths connected to Mothman and the movie. And that's why I put together the Mothman death list, which is now up to 84 names of people connected. The director's wife died during the summer of 2004, 42-year-old woman. Died very mysteriously. The executive director of the movie died. special effects person connected to the movie. You can keep finding all of these. Two of the brothers of the first eyewitnesses died in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, the week the movie came out. And so I usually don't like to get into the psychological sinister factors related to cryptozoology, but with the Mothman, there's this whole aura around it that really is pretty unexplainable.
And isn't that then beyond just Thunderbirds, or is there some legend or myth connected to this?
Well, that's part of what Keo was trying to get to with regard to the Mothman prophecies. And is there something regarding Point Pleasant? Is there something spooky? And you look back, and this is something that Mark Hall found, is he looked back to folklore and research around Point Pleasant from the 1920s, and some of the people back then in the folklore were talking about whenever this bird-like creature was seen, bad things happened. So it's been around in that area for a long time.
Well, Lorne, of all the things that you cover as a cryptozoologist, what subject matter do you find to be the most perplexing?
Well, I'm really interested in Bigfoot. I think that there's a lot about Bigfoot that's extremely interesting, because here we have, you know, the vast North American area with these reports hundreds of years old. And we must be dealing here with a creature that's extremely intelligent, because the rare appearances and rare encounters that do happen show us that there's something there. But these creatures have really been able to not be, you know, taken, captured, killed by lumber trucks yet. And yet its time is coming, and I think we're getting closer and closer. It's just, I find it one of the most intriguing parts of the cryptozoological mysteries.
Well, I think so too. Now, you know, also the talk about the Jersey Devil, a lot of people have talked about that creature tied to calamities and catastrophes.
Right. Well, I think it's kind of a little upside down with regard to the Jersey Devil, because what's happened with the Jersey Devil, and this was the old legend in the 1700s, is that a woman felt she didn't, the Leeds woman didn't want her baby, and felt that the devil was born from her, you know, and that devil then flew off into the Pine Barrens, which is a kind of strange wooded area in New Jersey. But so if somebody's milk goes sour, or their keys are missing, or they can't find their socks, they blame it on the Jersey Devil. Or if they have a very bad NHL team, they say it's the Jersey Devil. So so a lot of people really have not seen the Jersey Devil, and almost anything that's from Bigfoot-type creatures to flying animals in the state of New Jersey is called the Jersey Devil.
Do we get
a local name that's gone wild?
Do we get Jersey Devil reports or Mothman reports in any other regions other than in this area?
Well, I think that's what, you know, certainly in Mark's book, Thunderbirds, tries to show the connection there with some animals that are like Mothman, and it's just because it's a regional name that everybody says the Mothman is only in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. As far as the Jersey Devil, here you've got the problem of people seeing black panthers, and there's black panthers seen all over the East Coast, about 40% of all mystery cats that are seen and not identified by zoologists tend to be black. And those are called Jersey Devils in New Jersey. You have the flying creatures that are seen back in the 1900s. People even said that they saw flying lions and flying horses and very strange sort of descriptions, but they were all labeled Jersey Devil. Then there's these strange reports of almost werewolf-like creatures that I think you've talked about on your program from Bay Road and Wisconsin, for instance. And if those creatures are seen in New Jersey, they're called New Jersey Devils. So it's one of those local monikers that's sort of encompasses anything strange there, but really has nothing to do with the reality of what's being seen in New Jersey.
Where do the red eyes come from then? There are a lot of reports that this creature has beady red eyes.
Well, what we know is that almost every time there's been beady red eyes on a Bigfoot report, a Mothman report, or any kind of Black Panther, that there's been a light source. And that's one of those things that's got exaggerated. I tracked down almost every Mothman report, and it was headlights of a car, it was a street light, it was moonshine, and there have not been any real reports of Mothman, for instance, where they're really having the red eye coming from the creature itself. It's just one of those things that's become part of the folklore.
All right, tell me more about at least your field. Is it growing?
It definitely is. And you see things like Wired magazine calling America Goes Crazy for Cryptozoology. I just came out of a month in which on one day, you know, I got 18 different little radio stations talking to me for 15 minutes. You know, I think I'm very proud to be on your show because you at least take the time to not just look for sound bites. You're very much interested in the whole complex subject.
Right.
But it's been exciting. You know, an exciting time. There was a Bates College did an art exhibit and a small one to really kick off what's going to happen next year there. Where they're going to have from June through October artists from all over the world showing their art along with real-life artifacts in cryptozoology, showing the overlap and influence between cryptozoology and art. That's something you could not have talked about 10 years ago because people weren't taking cryptozoology seriously enough to understand that it is influencing popular culture and art in a very large way. And that exhibit then is going to move to Kansas City, Missouri, and perhaps to Scotland and to the Pacific Northwest. So we have an interesting resurgence in what used to be called romantic zoology and cryptozoology being seen as having influences way beyond just animals.
Wouldn't you love to see a dinosaur, and I don't mean an ancestor type, but an actual dinosaur, Brontosaurus or Tyrannosaurus rex, or something like that, a saber-toothed tiger?
Oh, yeah. I think that what we're going to find is many of the animals that we're going to discover, such as probably the thylacine, the Tasmanian wolf, and Tasmanian tiger, that those are actually creatures that did not go extinct and are as exciting. I think that whenever we finally discover the Orangay Pindek or the Amas from Mongolian Russia, these creatures that people, you know, perhaps in the media are calling Bigfoot of Asia, those will turn out to be ancestral, you know, hominids, and they are relic human beings and relic prehistoric man. And that is going to really shake up the whole world of anthropology, evolution, religion, way beyond anything we can imagine.
I think mankind is much older than most people think.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it took 60 years to find the first giant pandas, 70-some years to find the first mountain gorilla. And so if you look at Bigfoot just being a creature that people started talking about seriously since 1958, we're still in the infancy period of discovering what we know about Bigfoot, Yeti, and we're going to get closer and closer.
Lonnie from Las Vegas, Nevada, writes, and he says, years ago he heard of a story presented as true on the radio of a child sent to the well to get some water. The child apparently was hauled straight up, and they could hear his cries, but no one could see him, and off he went. Something pick him up?
Yeah, there's quite a bit of documented reports of what people would call eagles, and they seem to be larger than eagles in Europe and Norway, of people being swooped up, of little kids being swooped up. Among the Native Americans, among the Cherokees, there's some very in-depth legends and good traditions of people really fearful of these creatures as they were washing their clothes and fishing and different things like that, swooping down and taking their children. And so we have to look at these accounts as being the fire beneath the smoke, and that they come right up until today, in which some dogs are being swooped up, and as well as children.
Did you ever hear of the story of the Piesaw bird in Alton, Illinois?
Oh, yeah. I've been there to see the recreation of it.
In the painting up there on the wall of the Mississippi.
Yes, and definitely that was one in which they were very fearful of this large creature that would come. And there was some even parts of the tradition where people were offerings were left, you know, usually animals. But when the Piesaw bird was not happy, it would come down and get a child, too.
Absolutely. There was an incredible mythology story of how an Indian finally shot in with bow and arrow, killed the Piassaw bird.
Right.
Something was happening, and I guess as we bring in Mart Hall next hour, he's going to tell us that something still is happening, huh?
Oh, yes, definitely still happening. And still, you know, being seen, oftentimes the reports are, you know, as large as a Cessna, as a small ultralight plane, and people are still using the yardsticks of today's modern technology to say that these birds are huge and flying over their cities and their rural areas.
And they're all over the place.
All over the place. And usually, as we know from the discoveries of the mountain gorilla, when the first reports of the mountain gorilla were talked about, these were fantastic apes that were upright, that were going around squeezing native women. And we know that in the beginning of all of these reports, they're usually over-romanticized, over-fantastic.
Yes.
And that still that doesn't mean we should ignore them.
Well, you know, the mythology as it blends with reality sometimes changes quite a bit, as we well know.
Right.
And, I mean, look at the stories of Dracula, for crying out loud.
Right. And we have, I think tomorrow is actually when King Kong, the new version of King Kong,
the new one comes out, yeah.
And if you look at the evolution of that movie, the first King Kongs were only about 12 feet tall, and then when it moved to New York in that film, they went to be 24 because they thought the skyscrapers. And the new film, what I'm hearing is that the creature is 8 to 10 feet tall, which is certainly within the range of Gigantopithecus, the ape that lived a mere 100,000 years ago, and a lot of people really relate to Yeti and Bigfoot. These creatures are out there. They're not that big. 8 feet tall is not really that big. It's big enough to scare people. But there are King Kongs that are out there right now.
I think you're right. Do you think the Congo or the Amazon, for different kinds of creatures that maybe we haven't found, might be the source, the location?
I think that what we're seeing is in Brazil, in the Amazon, you're seeing many new birds, perhaps a new feline, new monkeys are being discovered. There's a much more politically friendly situation there for scientists to go in and find these new animals. The Congo, it was one of the first areas that people decided to explore, and now it's become extremely dangerous politically. So I think we'll see many new discoveries coming out of the Amazon in the next 20 years, and less frequently out of the Congo, not because they're not there, but certainly because of the political situation. I think, for instance, that bonobo ape is going to, you know, the B-I-L-I, the Billy ape, which was discovered by National Geographic, and it hasn't been verified, but it's certainly, that's in the Congo, and it seems to be someplace between a gorilla and a chimpanzee. We're going to hear more about that in the next couple of years.
See, I still think in the romantic part of it, I believe that there is a small dinosaur in there somewhere.
Yeah, well, I'm one of the mammal kind of camp for that. I think what we're going to find is a new rhinoceros that is aquatic, and people have been mixing up with dinosaurs.
That's
and I think that's going to be just as exciting.
Okay, stay with us, Lauren Coleman. We're going to bring in Mark Hall. We're going to talk about Thunderbirds in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.